and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with Laron Landis and the late Patty Fink will be joining us in just a few minutes. We just got word from her. She's in the car on the way, and I guess listening, but Patty will join us in a few minutes. We have a guest today. Her name is Abby Dees. For our regular Lambda Weekly listeners, Abby's been with us before. She's the author of the book, Queer Questions, Straight Talk, 108 Frank and Provocative Questions It's Okay to Ask Your Lesbian, Gay, or Bisexual Loved One.
Welcome. Great book.
It is. Welcome, Abby.
Hi. Thanks for having me again.
Well, you know, we were just saying how, oh, God, 7 a.m., so hard for the math to work. Abby is out in California. It's 5 a.m. there. Thank you.
Wow. We really do thank you.
I really wanted to make sure that I got the full guilt effect from you guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, I got my coffee, so it's not so bad.
Okay, good. We're going to talk about workplace diversity issues today, because, Abby, you do diversity workshops?
Yeah.
Tell us about it. Just what does that even mean?
Well, you know, it's for me, it's an extension, a very natural extension of the book, and also the work I was doing as a lawyer where, you know, it's ostensibly people have all these serious legal problems or whatever, but really the issue is kind of communication and recognizing that there are assumptions and attitudes that trip us up. And so for the diversity work, that's very specific to the workplace, where everybody at this point pretty much agrees that a diverse workplace is a good thing, and that's where we want to be going. But how you get there and how you create actually a welcoming environment isn't so clear. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of mixed messages around that, you know, and this goes back to my book, where on one hand we're supposed to be inclusive and celebrating people's differences, and on the other hand we have very few tools for how to address differences, how to talk about them. I think we all sort of think, oh, it's not polite to kind of bring up our differences. Mm-hmm. And so the diversity workshops are kind of how to do that.
I know it's been in the news a lot in the past year, or if not past 2 years, about bullying and so forth, and I think a lot of people think that it's only that only happens with teenagers or young adults and so forth. But I would assume, is that kind of part of your curriculum also in the workplace?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's everything from that kind of straight-out inappropriate behavior to the unconscious things that we do to put walls up between us.
Yeah. You know, here at KNON, we were applying for a new grant because we're a non-commercial station, so we were applying for a grant for some money.
And our station, when you're non-commercial, I know that well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And our station manager asked us if we would help, and we got a few people, you know, on city council, a couple of other people who we've had as guests and that we're friendly with, to write letters of support for us. And he wrote out a model letter. And what was very funny was it included, you know, because KNON has programming for American Indians, for black, Hispanic, for several African, and, you know, just everything. And I looked at the letter and I said, Dave, I think you're missing somebody. And he said, who? I said, us. And he said, oh, yeah, you're part of our diversity. I didn't even think about that. Because, but it was funny because he said, because you've been with us since we're one of the original shows on the air here. We've been on for 28 years on the station. We're so diverse here that he doesn't even think of us as being part of the diversity. We're just we're the mainstream here.
And that is kind of the goal. I mean, you do want to get there. We're just not there yet.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to remember that in most places we're not there yet. We do still need to be just conscious about this stuff, but I'm also a big proponent, as you know, if you've read the book, of this idea that perfection is really not what you're going for. Mm-hmm. What you want is sort of a good faith effort that's not fake.
Right.
You know, it's hard.
It is. So when you're talking to people about diversity issues, you don't, we're not looking, don't hire me because I'm gay. It's more don't not hire me for that reason, right?
Right. Or the other thing is don't inadvertently put me kind of outside of this culture that we have. So, you know, it's everything from the, you know, company party where all your wives and husbands mm-hmm. are invited. You know, just that, you know what I'm talking about, that kind of thing.
Oh,
but
yeah.
that happens in so many ways. And it's just that natural human tendency to define who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so you forget that we, your concept of we, might be just a little narrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I come from the place, generally, that most people are not intentionally discriminatory
mm-hmm.
or bigoted. I think people are a little flipped out by some of our differences, and they're afraid to talk about things like race and sexual orientation and all of this. But I think we all do want to be inclusive, but then we also have that tendency to just gravitate to what's familiar to us. We do that as a community. And I think one of the best things that's happened in our community, for example, is that we really have recognized our straight allies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's an example of diversity. It's just, you know, and diversity is so often used as kind of a placeholder word for everyone that's not, you know, straight, white, and male. And it isn't. It's everybody. We're all diverse. We're all part of diversity.
Right. So let's say, you know, we're here at a particular company, and most people, they hire, I think most people hire the best person.
Yeah.
But very often, if you're between three or four candidates, the best person is the person who looks most like you, or the person who you just right. hit it off with the best.
Yeah.
Right. That sort of like I'm familiar with them, or they're the person I could imagine mm-hmm. golfing with is sort of a trite example. But yeah, and I think that that's what very often happens, is that that's the one you just feel like, oh, I can get along with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that falls down along those lines, those traditionally discriminated against groups get kind of shut out, or maybe not, depending on whatever where you're coming from. And so the point of the diversity training is to identify those automatic decisions that you make that you didn't even realize you made, that can lock good people out or create a barrier or a sense of isolation in the workplace around people from different backgrounds. And also to kind of dislodge that thinking a little bit, so the idea of, you know, they are different, that's actually cool, that could really work here.
Mm-hmm.
Not they're different and I need to keep my quota up.
Right.
You know, they're different and difference is good, and that different perspective or not is an asset to this company.
Mm-hmm.
And really, diversity training and diversity thinking should ultimately be a strategy for making your business and your company better, more sort of future-focused, and reaching a larger number of people. It makes good business sense to do this.
Abby, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, in the course of your diversity training, do you, I don't know, put any responsibility or talk a little bit about the person who is the diverse person, whether it's the lone gay person, the lone gay person of color, in the midst of all this, because what I have found...
Or like LaRon, the lone handicapped person of color who's also a parent who...
Exactly.
You're right. Yeah,
exactly. Because what I have found in pretty much all of my jobs, I...
Not that I'm pigeonholing you.
No.
Marginalizing you.
I stick out like a sore thumb.
But we do have him on this show because he sticks out like a sore thumb.
And I do. And
yeah.
I do.
We don't like him. We have to put up with him.
And what I have found is sometimes... people come in, ask me questions like I'm the spokesperson for the entire
yeah.
GLBT community. And, you know, I don't mind as long as you're asking kind of in a, you know, appropriate way. You're just not trying to get a laugh or something like that. Because my philosophy is I'd rather you ask than to assume and assume wrong.
Well, that's exactly it. And that's also the idea behind my book, is that nobody wants to be the poster child.
Right.
For whatever group, and it gets...
See, I wouldn't mind, Abby, I wouldn't mind being the poster child. I'd rather be the billboard person, though.
Okay, all right. So identify the person in your company who wants to be the billboard. but talking about that, I think for a lot of people it gets old,
mm-hmm.
Right.
especially
right.
if you get heard the same question over and over. But, you know, so on one hand, I advise people... don't just reach for the nearest person who fits whatever slot you want to know about. Reach out farther than that. Get more, invite people to participate in helping you build your company or answer those questions, and don't just have one person be the constant point person, because they probably have other things to do. But the flip side is that is when we are the trailblazers, if you will, in whatever, we know this, you sometimes do have to be that person that answers questions, and you always have to go to intent. And you also have the ability in the workplace to say enough. This is, at this point, this is constituting harassment. And so I do talk a lot about people who are sort of on the receiving end, how they can establish boundaries around this. Because most people, I think, do want to contribute to accurate information and get rid of the old assumptions. But if you've got other things to do, you don't really want to be the world's educator, or the world's, you don't want to be the example of why everyone in your group does what they do.
Right. Now, when you're talking to people, do you use your book, your Queer Questions, Straight Talk book, quite a bit?
I haven't, actually.
You haven't? Okay, well, that's interesting. Because what you're just saying really relates right back to your book, where the idea of the book is that here are a bunch of questions. Every gay person has heard these questions before, but... you know,
but every gay person doesn't know the answer.
Everybody does.
I certainly use the material in the book. Exactly that thing.
Yeah, and the idea is, it's okay to ask the question. It's okay to either answer or not answer, and here's an answer when you're not comfortable answering. Even that, I'm just not comfortable answering that question.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's still this thing, and I harp on this in the book, is really good manners, that kind of old-fashioned good manners that maybe your grandmother taught you, or that she would be proud of, that works.
Yeah, right.
You sort of forget about that. There's so much political talk, you forget that you can just have good manners, everyone, around this stuff.
Right, so in the workplace, though, because in the workplace you're dealing with laws, in addition to just working with friends, and you do have to be careful. Do you think it's a good thing for, like, LaRon in his daytime workplace to say, you know, it's okay for you to ask me any question, but then it's okay for me to say, I'm not comfortable answering that?
I mean, it's always a personal choice, and the law does a good but somewhat awkward job of creating general rules that apply to everybody, and we know that no rules apply to everybody.
Sure.
And so the problem with saying you can ask me anything in the workplace is that it can be construed as permission to be harassed.
Oh.
And so, you know, but that is still a matter of personal choice, and you never waive your ability to say, all right, at this point you've crossed the line. And once you say that you've crossed the line now, if that behavior doesn't stop, or those questions don't stop, you know, then you may have a legal issue in the workplace.
Yeah. So that's where it would be different, really.
Yeah,
but
and
I don't think
probably why I haven't used the book, because I'm not quite saying in the workplace that you can just go to town on these questions. I think
right.
that you need to be a little bit more mindful of the fact that there are all these laws. And then there's also this other thing that happens in the workplace, is someone overhearing your conversation could be offended.
Oh, right.
That's true.
And so you always have to bear that in mind, too. So you're kind of taking responsibility for what you're willing to deal with, but then you also have to keep a mind to what people around you are, you know, their sensibilities. Now, the law does expect people to be reasonable. It's in the workplace. You don't have to be, the law is not assuming that everyone's super sensitive, even though a lot of people think that it does. The standard is, would a reasonable person be offended?
Sure.
And you have to make that judgment call every day.
I think sometimes, too, it's been at least my experience and some of those I know who've encountered this in the workplace. When people ask a question, they ask you, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
And, you know, that they're being as careful about it, I think, as in most cases.
I will say that's the case with me.
You know, so that if you wanted to take it to a private place, well, let's go outside for a minute.
Right.
And, you know, that kind of thing, then... you could do that if you felt like that was appropriate in your mm-hmm. in your workplace.
Yeah, yeah, but you're responsible for your own comfort level to some extent around this stuff. And also, you can't ever forget that you're in this strange family, if you will, in the workplace where all sorts of people have all sorts of different attitudes about this stuff. And so you are, first of all, a person that's protected by those laws and that culture, and you're also a person whose job is to be mindful of who's around you mm-hmm. and what you're doing with your larger corporate culture. I might be rambling because it's 5 a.m.
but you yeah, have you know, have coffee again, there, Abby. We don't have coffee here in the studio.
I'm going to go and get more coffee. But yes, again, it comes down to that thing. It's like common sense.
Yeah.
Have good manners. If you're going to have a quote-unquote sensitive mm-hmm. conversation, you might want to not do it, you know, out in the lobby. You know, you're always having to decide what's the appropriate thing to do right now.
You know, it's interesting because we do a lot of diversity training through the Dallas Gay and Lesbian Alliance, and particularly with the City of Dallas, through the Police Academy and the Fire and Rescue Academy and such. And we really encourage questions in that
yeah.
moment in time, but we never answer it in the way that many people might think, because we've stressed that we are diverse, socially economic diversity, racial diversity, religious diversity. The GLBT community and allies are extremely diverse. And so
right,
we don't say
it's our biggest challenge in some ways, and also the coolest thing about us, I think.
Well, and it's always interesting because they ask a question, and if they ask a question like, "Do you want to get married?" And they say, mm-hmm. "Well, I can only speak for me," mm-hmm. and yes,
yeah.
I would. But there is a school of thought out there in our community, and that says, "Hey, you know, I don't really care to get married,"
mm-hmm.
or
right.
civil unions are fine with me. And so we try to talk about it in those schools of thought. Or that to stress that we're not speaking for every GLBT person in existence.
I think that's the hardest thing about being the one that sticks out like a sore thumb, is you inadvertently are speaking for your entire community, whatever your community is. And that gets hard. And sort of the biggest point of diversity to get your head around is, all right, so you've got different groups of people representing different backgrounds, and still you don't know anything about them. Because we are all so different, and as soon as you have more than one of whatever, you know, whether it's an LGBT person or a person of color, someone with disabilities, is that you realize, oh wow, that tells you nothing about them, because you've got two very different points of view on the same thing, and then that confuses people a little bit, and that's good.
And Abby, we need to take a break. I think you pigeonholed Lauren and Patty perfectly. They stick out like a sore thumb. And,
yes, let's do that.
That's what I heard. We're talking to Abby Dees. She's the author of Queer Questions, Straight Talk. She does diversity training. We'll be back talking a little bit more about diversity training, but first we need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM.
KNON thanks Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERImaging.com
828-9500 extension 234.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And before we go to the entertainment report, Polka Doc over here,
uh-huh.
he saw me cue that, and it just said 234. That was a pledge reminder. If you have not made your pledge yet, you can go online to KNON.org/pledge, or just go to KNON.org, click on the pledge button, and you can make your pledge. If you made a pledge to us, thank you very much, and...
We appreciate your support.
We do.
Very
and,
much so.
You should have gotten your card, although I think all of our pledgers paid by credit card, the ones who called in. So thank you very much, and why don't we go to the entertainment report.
I think you just, oh.
There it goes.
I thought you stopped it.
No, I didn't. There it goes. Laron.
All righty. The new cast for the upcoming season of Dancing with the Stars has been announced already, and there's controversy already, and the show hasn't even started. In addition to Queer Eye for the Straight Guys, Openly Gay fashion guru Carson Kressley making the cast, Chas Bono is a first. She right. will be the first transgender person.
He.
I'm so sorry. See, he's even taking me out. He will be the first transgender person on the show, and it's causing some controversy already. People are wondering, is he going to dance with a male or a female, which is kind of a dumb question for me, but people are asking it. And
if you were on, who would you be dancing with?
I don't know.
Exactly. So.
Well, they have had an openly gay person on before, and it was Lance Bass, and he danced with a woman. I don't think they allow same-sex dancing. They don't care what your sexual orientation is.
Okay, first question for Abby when Abby's back with us. That's not diversity.
Excuse me, that's not diversity. No, ABC has not made an official comment other than to say that they have received a good deal of praises and nasty complaints about this. And one of my coworkers, she sent this to me as soon as it was announced the other day. And she thought, and she brought up an interesting point. She thought, well, it might be a little easier for people to digest if Chas were more passable. And I thought, you know, that might be a point.
Have you seen Chas lately?
Yeah, I don't think he looks like a man just yet.
Oh, I do.
I do.
I don't. Maybe because I know it's...
Now,
it used to be Chastity Bono, but I just think it looks like, you know, more of a butch lesbian.
I have to say...
Because he met Chas as a butch lesbian.
And that's what I'm saying. That could be my...
Could be because that...
I'm just prejudiced on that.
And this
because I know what she used to look like.
Right.
But...
And this is the first time... I think this is the first Lambda Weekly guest who is on Dancing with the Stars.
I think so, too.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that when you said controversial, I thought for sure you were going to say it's because it was Nancy Grace.
Grace going to be on?
She's on that,
God.
Too. Yeah. I know. Now I don't watch the show anymore, but it's going to be interesting.
I've never watched it, but I'm like, ooh, Nancy Grace.
Yeah.
I wonder if she'll fall.
Let's hope. Oh, I didn't say that. Lady Gaga again sold the show at the MTV Video Awards this year by opening the show and performing in complete man drag. She also later won the award for the first ever best video with a message for the gay anthem Born This Way. It was a really, really good performance. Actor Sean Hayes will soon be returning to network television in a new sitcom about gay fathers. Now, the actor best known as Jess Jack on Will and Grace is going to appear in a show about a couple raising a 12-year-old. Now, the creators...
Does he play the 12-year-old?
Good question.
Because
it doesn't say.
Okay.
It doesn't say. Now, the creators of the show are saying that this is kind of like groundbreaking, even though they do mention Modern Family because they have two dads on that show. But this isn't the first time that there's going to be a show based on two fathers raising.
Right, my two dads.
Well, they weren't a couple.
Oh, please.
No, back in 2003, it was a show called It's All Relative on ABC. And it only lasted for one season, but I thought it was pretty good. But they had, it was a gay couple, and they had a daughter. So,
oh, well, my two dads was a gay couple. They just never said it.
Well, and Cam and Mitchell are part of an ensemble cast.
That's true.
There's no question that Modern Family is an ensemble
format. That's true. They're not the leads.
Right.
Good point. And last, in about 3 weeks, on September 20th, the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell law will officially become a thing of the past. And HBO is getting in on a historic moment with a new documentary. At midnight on September 19th, they're going to air this documentary called The Strange History of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The film is directed by Emmy winners Fenton Bailey and Randy Barbato, the team making film behind The Eyes of Tammy Faye.
Right.
So it should be good.
Yeah.
Should be very good.
Yeah.
Good. And that's the entertainment report. We're talking today to Abby Deese. She's the author of Queer Questions, Straight Talk. We didn't lose you, and you didn't fall asleep again, did you, Abby?
No, I'm back.
Oh, you're still there. You're there.
Coffee.
Good.
Yeah.
Keep it coming.
Trying.
We're talking today diversity issues. What's your name who sits across the table? This is how I am at 7 a.m. I've only known Patty for,
A zillion years?
Yeah, something like that. Patty does trainings here in Dallas with Dallas Gay and Lesbian Alliance for the police department especially. That's the one you've been doing for years and years. Who do you usually do? You usually do corporate, don't you, Abby?
Well, that's been my change of focus. I come from a nonprofit background. And so I'm really taking, it's a natural evolution of what I was doing in nonprofit. And it, like I used to work, the last job I had was working this is the morning, HIV positive inmates. So I also worked with a lot of sheriff's department deputies. And so I got used to sort of talking to different people, doing different stuff together. But yes, I've moved on to corporate stuff. They need help. They're trying. They need help.
And here's what my question was then. What is the difference between diversity training, nonprofit or government, like Patty, what you're doing, and corporate?
When it comes down to the basic issues, not a lot. really. The thing with corporate, though, that I'm still getting my head around is that ultimately they're about profit. And so that actually opens up diversity training or the concept of corporate diversity a little bit as a way to get to that goal. It sounds a little cynical, but it makes sense if you think about it. This world is no longer defined in tiny little isolated groups. The internet and everything else has completely changed that. The nature of corporate environment where people have different offices in different states and countries means that this is where it's going. And so getting your head around diversity stuff and not just giving it lip service is really the way to be a profitable company. I think with government and government especially, they have some different rules and things around this, and the motivations are a little bit different. And in nonprofit, same thing. I think in nonprofit, a lot of people feel like they're already on top of this because nonprofit, by nature, deals with a lot of different kinds of people. But the issues are the same. I mean, human beings, we're still tripping over our own feet, trying to do the right thing, not always getting it right.
Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting place that you start from. The people are trying to do the right thing.
I think so. I get amazed at what people don't know. That does surprise me, I admit. But they do want to do the right thing. They're a little scared of this. The problem with diversity training is that it's gotten a lot of bad rap, mm-hmm. just across the board. I think there's a lot of sense that it's about being politically correct. It's about silencing people, which it really shouldn't be. And it's about quotas and feeling like there's a lot of misinformation out there about how you do have to hire someone who's not good for the job because of quotas and that kind of thing. And that really, really doesn't happen like that anymore.
But you know what I find is so interesting is that, certainly in a governmental situation, you know, one of the best tools we have in our tool belt is to say, you know, you can have your own beliefs and you can come to your job with those beliefs, but you don't know who's on the other end of that call when you need to go and treat them or whatever your interaction might be. And so we're here and we're not going away, and it's not a matter of when, if you're going to encounter a GLBT person, it's when and how often.
It's
a reality, but I think that's more and more true in corporate America as well. And the motivation, I think, is so interesting because they do look at it from a for-profit and how does it fit who we are, because who we are is making money. Mm-hmm. But when they really get the idea, I think that there are people in your company who are so focused on not coming out because they fear for their jobs, that they're not being as productive as they could be. They're not being as creative and open-minded about their work rather than about, you know, how do I get through lunch without somebody asking me what I did this weekend?
Right.
You know, I think that really comes across to them as like, we need to change that, because
and
if they're fearing for their job, that's bad.
Yeah, it is. It makes them not productive. And it also means that you're locked out, too, as a company from whatever resources they have, potentially, they may not have, but from their connection to their community, like how to advertise to this community, how to reach new groups, new consumers. I can't believe I'm using that word, but yeah. And it is a loss when you keep going with this mindset, this is the way we've always done it. I mean, one of the things that comes to my mind is the old image of IBM. and IBM was the classic. They had, you know, their company was just a bunch of white guys in flat tops and white shirts and ties.
Pale, male, and stale.
That was the image of IBM. Pardon?
Pale, male, and stale. As we said.
You know, and now, you know, if IBM has to keep going, they have to get away from that completely. Mm-hmm. And I think they've done that for the most part, but that's just the future. You can't hold on to this old idea anymore.
You know, a previous job I had, I do editing and writing, but a previous job I was doing some editing that I was editing financial reports that got filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission, the most boring job I ever had. One of the mutual funds whose prospectuses we'd edit over and over and over again, because there are, you know, they had several hundred mutual funds and then each one in different classes, and but there was one page that we edited over and over and over again. This was their fund managers. And I noticed one time in their big book that had all of the funds put together in it, they had all of their fund managers. There were 31 fund managers that worked for this company. Not only were all 31 of them male, they were all white. Actually, one of them might have been non-white, I'm not sure what, but all 31 male, all of them in their 30s, maybe some were in their 40s, but all looked, you know, so it was, while there might have been more diversity there, the appearance was they were all the same.
Right.
And, you know, it occurred to me, you can't tell from a picture whether any of them were gay.
That's the problem. Yeah.
But I could tell that if I was a woman investing, you know, I was thinking, really, there isn't a single woman. This fund was based in Denver. There isn't a single woman in the city of Denver who's qualified to manage one of these funds. There's
not. You have to ask.
Yeah. You know, there's not a single person of color, of any color whatsoever, qualified to, you know, and even if all 31 of these people were perfectly qualified and doing a great job, which they weren't because the funds were not doing very well, they couldn't find it. Really?
It does make you actually wonder if they're doing a good job. That's where we are at this point, is if you look at a photograph like that and you're looking with an all critical eye, you're wondering, are you guys paying attention?
Mm-hmm. Because I tell you what, that would jump out at me. That would really jump out at me.
Would you have invested, Patty, with that company?
No.
See, and I wouldn't either, because it says to me, if they'll only look at a certain type of person, well, they're probably going to take my money and only do one type of investment. And when the economy changes, I want people who think different ways to creatively take my money and reinvest it in a different way in order to overcome the whatever the economy is doing at that time. And I think ultimately I'm proving myself right in this, because that company, their funds are terrible. So.
I would like to have seen in that picture an enormous, fabulous drag queen. And then I'd say, all right, I'm giving him my money.
Exactly.
You know what's interesting is I went Monday night to SMU's law school, put on the Louise Biraggio Endowed Lecture Series at McFarland Auditorium with U.S. Supreme Court Associate Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Oh, wow.
And it was a delightful evening. And if you were there, you know what I'm talking about. She has an enormous sense of humor and such. But she underscored, as in her work early on as an attorney, and also with Louise Biraggio, who in Texas, you know, we had the first unified family code because in the country. Because of Louise Biraggio, we have the first, you know, marital law reform happened with Louise Biraggio. But as they're telling the stories of the amazing indignities and discrimination that was in the law and in practice, women couldn't serve on juries. A married woman couldn't have a bank account in her own name, and she lost all the property she brought into the marriage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as Louise Biraggio put it, she says, you know, in Texas, a man and a woman become one, and that one is the man.
Right.
You know, and so, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg had a lot of stories. She's done enormous work. And yet, and I think, wow, we've come a long way, but a lot of this was just in the 60s. And, you know, I was born in the 60s, so it's recent. But we have these same struggles today with the GLBT community, oftentimes with people with disabilities, you know, and other minorities. We're still struggling. We're still fighting this situation. So that you can be in the workplace and hold a job and not, you know, be discriminated against.
And it's that thing where if they can't see you,
right,
then it's human nature not to see you and not to try to find anything out that's different about you. And I have talked to some people on the phone who say, well, I don't think we have any gay people in our office. And they're not saying this in a mean, homophobic way. They're just naive.
Exactly. And we had another issue, too, with a public entity. We said, do you have any gay people? And they said, well, oh, yeah, we have you know, ex-lesbians. I was like, well, do you know that because they came out to you, or are you superimposing upon them your perception of who they are? And he goes, well, I guess they haven't come out to us. So I'm like, okay, so then you don't really have any openly gay people on the job.
Oh, I thought you said ex-lesbians.
No.
Out lesbians.
Out lesbians. That's an answer.
yeah, ex-lesbians.
Now, but that's some diversity there.
Exactly. But I also found, too, when I was on the National Board of Governors for HRC, there was a gentleman who came and spoke with us who was openly gay, and he was at a major corporation, I guess I can say it. He was at Walmart, and he was working with them to get their non-discrimination policy in play. And the second they got it, they wanted to start advertising in magazines and all this stuff. He goes, no, we can't. Oh, whoa, horsey, you know. We have to stop this because it has to be real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can't just say we're doing this and then, you know, people, you know, in Birmingham, Alabama are saying, that's what? You know, and and then they think, well, that's the end of the road. They're advertising in magazines. That they've got this, you know.
This idea of a consistency of messaging and meaning it. Good faith, there are some core concepts, and consistency is one of them. So you can't, there's not just one thing that you can do that's going to increase your diversity and you're done. But good faith effort is a huge one that goes with that. And it's what people come up against a lot is this sense that it is total lip service, or that saying that we are a diverse company is what you need to do, and that's it.
Right. And you can't just say, well, we're diverse.
Yeah, people can smell that. The hypocrisy is so obvious with that. And again, I don't think there's an intent to do that, and I do tell people that definitely if you are doing something like that, get it out there, let people know. But that's also your compact where you need to then keep doing it. You can't just advertise it and let it go because that looks really bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's not an unusual situation for a company to have policy and no one's out. You look across the workforce in their workplace, and no one's out. So how real can that be? Because you know somebody's gay.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to a lot of people about that thing, too, is that you cannot look around and assume and draft your policies for the people you think are there. You have to draft your policies for the people that may come or the people that are there and you don't know it yet.
Let's talk about that in a minute. We need to take a break. We're talking to Abby Dees. She's the author of Queer Questions, Straight Talk. We're talking diversity in the workplace today. And Abby, stick with us. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Dallas Voice, a Texas LGBT media company, has covered news, entertainment, culture, and opinion in the North Texas LGBT community for more than 25 years. Every week, Dallas Voice reaches more than 45,000 North Texas LGBT readers in print. DallasVoice.com informs more than 170,000 visitors every month, with breaking news appearing throughout the day, every day in the Instant Tea blog. Dallas Voice is proud to support KNON Community Radio.
If you don't want your old SUV or other gas guzzler, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can take it off your hands. Call us today at 877-KNON-AUTO or donate online at KNON.org. Our representative will take all of your information and arrange a convenient time to pick up your vehicle. All it takes is a call to 877-KNON-AUTO and we'll create great programming from your old car, truck, or boat. 877-KNON-AUTO.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink.
He's still alive.
And the early LaRon Landis has run off to his office. He has to be down there by 8 o'clock. I hope he caught the train, which stops right out in front of our studio, and that's much more information than anybody needs to know. We're talking to Abby Dees. She is the author of Queer Questions, Straight Talk. We're talking diversity issues. Abby, go ahead, Patty.
Well, I have a question for you, Abby. Mm-hmm. You're in California, but I would assume that you work with companies anywhere they might be.
Yep.
What do you see any, comparing and contrasting between a state where LGBT people have employment protection versus a state that, say, like Texas, which is a right-to-work state?
Yeah. At this point, I do see some, but with an asterisk. In California, it's easy in some ways to say, well, here are our laws. We've done, with the exception of Prop 8, we've done a pretty good job as a state of at least legally guaranteeing LGBT equality. So you can start from that place. And mm-hmm. people just know, well, now you have to deal with it because mm-hmm. it's been codified.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, and in other states, you're coming from the position of, well, as a company, it's probably in your interest to do LGBT positive corporate policies. And it changes the emphasis a little bit. So I need to come again from that idea of it makes a better workplace for everybody, it's just good corporate responsibility, it's good for your bottom line. And that's true in California as well, but they have the extra added thing of you have to do this anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's so fascinating to me is when we ask the question, is it legal to fire someone in the state of Texas simply because they're gay? And the whole room says no.
Yeah.
And we say, no, actually it is. It's absolutely legal. And yet, with all of this, and you see the surveys and the studies that have been done, that there is great support for an ENDA, an Employment Non-Discrimination mm-hmm. Act, and it's really already there fairly solidly. Why something that is so well approved across the country cannot pass Congress? It's just a political observation, but
I think that this is this American fair play thing, and if you spend your time watching CNN and Fox, which I know we all do,
Patty watches Fox all the time.
It's good fun. It makes you think that all these people that are against our rights or say that they're not supporting marriage equality or whatever, that they're coming from an informed place around this mm-hmm. and that they actually have thought about these issues. And for the most part, I think people haven't. And the example you gave, if you ask a room full of people, is it legal to fire someone who's gay in Texas? And they all say no. Mm-hmm. Because people really don't know what the issues are affecting us. And so going straight to that American fair play thing, which I really like to believe is operating still, you do have to do a little basic education.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing to do in anywhere, whether it's California or Texas or Louisiana. Guess what? Here is an example of what discrimination looks like for an individual person. This is how it can happen. And so you need to give them the bottom line. It's the basic education thing.
But don't you think in most cases, when most people are saying that, no, it's not legal, they're thinking it's not legal because it is such a basic thing, most people wouldn't even consider firing somebody because of that?
Yes, but then there are those occasional ones that would...
Of course there are, but I'm saying generally, Patty asked the question and most people say, no, of course you can't fire.
Yeah.
Because why...
You can't believe that...
It sounds so unfair.
It sounds unfair. Yeah.
And so that bottom line sense of fair play, I think, is something that that gets forgotten in the political talk in the media. Mm-hmm. And if you talk to people one-on-one, and again, this goes back to some of the ideas of my book, generally one-on-one, I think most people are grappling to be fair. Mm-hmm. No one wants to be mean.
And they'll deny it, too, when you say, well, why would you oppose an Employment Non-Discrimination Act? Because we've been pushing one in Texas for a very long time. And I think it comes back to the same reason why we have, even though it was the law that was struck down as unconstitutional in Lawrence v. Texas, mm-hmm. landmark, case in our community, And yet the Texas, you know, Penal Code Section 2106 is still in the books, and it's there to make a statement. They will not take it off the books. It's printed in the books with, you know, that says this is declared unconstitutional.
And this session once again tried to get rid of it and got voted down.
And that case happened tonight.
Something about that I find kind of actually historically good. I mean, maybe this is my contrarian thinking. Like, keep it in the books. I want people to see where we've come. The problem is that creates confusion.
Right, and we have to be sure that, you know, officers and people who are serving the public understand that this is unconstitutional, because we had a case in El Paso where a police officer tried to arrest a couple under 2106 maybe 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unconstitutional in Texas. It's unconstitutional, you know,
anywhere.
Nationwide. Right.
It's so important for people to understand. You can have all the laws in the world, but if no one knows what they are, and if no one is trained on enforcing them, they don't matter.
Right.
I'm
wondering.
And education is really still important around this stuff. It doesn't stop with a change in the law.
I'm wondering if you encounter in your corporate travels, you know, this idea of one-upmanship or shaming, where, you know, someone in a given industry has like 100% rating with HRC and they've got, you know, every policy that can imagine, and then the company you're working with has nothing. or they just got it. And, you know, I mean, and you say, look at all these companies.
I haven't come across that just yet. I might. But what that does remind me of, and I think also to your previous question, is that one of the problems with those companies that think they've just got it and that they've got their 100% HRC rating and all that is complacency.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you had asked a few minutes ago about, say, California that has all these laws in place. How does it look different? Well, in fact, it doesn't look that different, because people still don't really know what the issues are on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, if they're doing business with a company in Arkansas or whatever, that there are things there that they need to bear in mind. Just because all their gay employees may be out in L.A., which I doubt, chances are they're in the closet in another state.
Mm-hmm.
But they still have to meet the needs of those people.
Right. And I think a lot of people in the LGBT community, on the flip side of that, when they're looking for employment, you know, it depends on how hard the market is. But I know I did. I looked for a company that had protections on the books before I went with them. And then my company was sold, and the new company came in, and I just cringed before I opened the PDF.
Oh, God.
And I'm thinking, am I going to be looking for another job? What's going to happen here? And lo and behold, big and bold in the employment protection. So
Which is good.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to see that?
And been there a long time.
I emphasize to people when they're drafting corporate policies is that whatever your applicable laws are your baseline. You can do whatever is right. And you know, assuming that you're meeting the law. So if it's a company in a state that doesn't have non-protection or non-discrimination laws is trying to draft their corporate policies, they are completely free to put it big and bold right there that they personally have a non-discrimination policy, and of course I encourage that heartily.
Right, and certainly if it's just even non-discrimination in terms of employment, hiring, firing, and promoting, but you know, things like bereavement leave and you know, those kinds of things, they can go well above and beyond whatever local or state ordinance might say, you know?
Yeah, and I think people actually worry that they're somehow going to conflict with local laws, and that's another thing that I do is let people know you are free to be more inclusive and more far-reaching in your policies than your applicable laws.
We had a good example of that here. It was last fall. AT&T, which gets 100% with HRC, an employee of theirs here wanted to take family medical leave because his partner was recovering from a stroke and he needed to be there with him for the next month or so as he was getting out of the hospital and needed to take care of him. And this was a partner who did get, you know, partnership benefits such as, you know, health care benefits through his company. Got all those kinds of things, but that family medical leave, where somebody takes off an unpaid leave of absence, they wouldn't give it to him. He went to an attorney about it. The attorney worked with him for months, finally came to Dallas Voice. Dallas Voice made a call, and what AT&T's answer was, well, we don't have to give it because the local law doesn't insist that we do. But yet this is a company that has 100% on HRC. It's a large enough company that to have one employee out for a month, it certainly
not
isn't going
to
hurt them.
Down.
Right. What if this guy was sick? You know, he'd be out.
Yeah.
And it's not going to cost them. Well, it's not going to cost them anything because it's unpaid leave.
Right.
And they finally gave in on it, but it took weeks because they said, "Well, we have to renegotiate the union contract, and we have to." It was so frustrating. Because all you're doing is telling the guy, yeah, you can take off. And what they ended up doing was...
And what a waste of energy for everybody, including AT&T.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
What they ended up doing was making a special exemption that he was just taking some time off separately. They did finally change the policy, and they made such a big deal about it. Have you run into things like that where it's just ridiculous things that they're not really trying to not do the right thing, but...
You know, and people get they get nervous of about lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of fear of what the company lawyer will say is, it kind of gets in the way of people's common sense around this. Now, I am a lawyer, so I get, talk to your lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
But there is that kind of... paralysis around what can we do. The law is so complicated around this. You can always make a choice to treat your employee in a similar fashion to your other employees. That will always be the right choice. And as soon as you start not treating them the same, that's when you run into problems. It is that simple. Now, of course, there are always weird things that come up that you can't sort of foresee. But generally, from an HR standpoint, that's a good guideline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people forget that all the laws, all of these things, do endeavor to just put that idea into practice. Mm-hmm. And so to the extent that you are in good faith doing that too, it's likely that you are going to be fine from a legal standpoint.
And I think for many, many small business owners, you know, and medium and even large companies, I think a great resource out there to understand how to implement maybe what you want to do in going forward, and certainly, you know, that would include training, is to get involved with Out and Equal, a great organization that has an enormous, brain set there on how to do it right, mm-hmm. how to do it legally, how to do it, you know, properly, and how to do it effectively.
And again, from the corporation protecting itself standpoint, the more that they, whatever the company is, do that kind of research, reach out, get other information, the more it looks like they are making the good faith effort. It's mm-hmm. not about doing it right every time. It's about the good faith effort to do it right every time that's informed. And so... where you run into problems is when you have a systemic, or you have a pattern of, well, this keeps happening whenever this pops up. This kind of discrimination happens. If you are saying, no, I'm trying to, in this case, with this fellow with AT&T,
yeah.
and I believe, not really knowing the facts of this particular case, but from what you're telling me, is if some person in control had said, by giving this person unpaid leave, we are treating them as similarly situated married people. And so that's the right choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they would have been fine. Who would have sued?
Exactly. Exactly. And they ended up doing the right thing. It's just it was an expensive legal battle to get them to do the right thing, which... they were kind of trying to do. Do you find that smaller companies are actually better at getting it because the top person in the company knows everybody in the company?
Yeah,
or do you find, so you do find small companies are
well,
better?
Well, if they're committed to it from the top. Mm-hmm. And the problem with the big companies, and this is a pattern I'm really noticing, is I get a call from, say, head of HR in the office in Nevada, for example, but they have offices in 10 other states.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, well, so this your diversity objectives is where, who's this coming from? Mm-hmm. And they have a general idea who it's coming from. And then I say, well, have you talked to the people in the other states, or what are they doing? And are you all on the same page? And they don't know. And they're just one person tasked with this job. And they have no idea what's happening on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And where a small company, there's more likelihood of kind of getting it right, having it go from top to bottom. There's also the possibility that if it's not coming from the top, then you're not going to get anywhere. And that is that's another one of those fundamentals, is that it really does have to come from the top. The top has to make a commitment to these things. Right. This can't be delegated out to some person to deal with.
Abby Dees, thank you very much for being with us. Her book is Queer Questions, Straight Talk, 108 Frank and Provocative Questions It's Okay to Ask Your Lesbian, Gay, or Bisexual Loved One. I love this book.
Thanks for coming, Abby.
Oh, thank you so much.
Come talk to us again, and we'll arrange, and you'll be on again, because we always have a great time talking.
You guys are very good fun. I want to talk about Chaz Bono next time.
Oh, okay. We certainly will.
Okay.
We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week. That brings us to the end of another show, and this is where our producer, Thomas Fearson, comes in and disavows any knowledge of our existence. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week.
For listening to the KNON Morning Line, we'd like to remind you that the views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNON 89.3 FM.